This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Tonight's program is going to feature two poets from the Davis area, Susan Kelly DeWitt and the late, wonderful Francisco X. Alarcón. We're going to be playing some music tonight, though, also because I just feel we need music as well as poetry, and they're just so closely related. So I'm going to start off with playing a cut from the Imagine Project by Herbie Hancock. That's the name of the CD. And this is Don't Give Up. It features Pink and John Legend. And the lyrics are by Peter Gabriel.
Take anymore. God. mother town tried hard to settle down for every job. So many men, so many men no one needs.
Don't give up, 'cause you have.
This is Catherine Hastings. We're going to move on now to poetry. My first featured guest tonight is Susan Kelly DeWitt. She is a Sacramento area poet who has many books of poems, including The Fortunate Islands. Her most recent collection is called Spider Season, and I had the opportunity of reading with Susan in Davis recently and was so impressed with her work in this book. So when she came to the Reader's Bookstore in Sonoma, and we read together there also, I recorded her reading. So here is Susan Kelly DeWitt reading from Spider Season.
So it's a pleasure to read with you, and thanks to Reader's Books. Thanks to all of you for coming out. I'm going to read from my new book, Spider Season, which came out earlier this year. And I probably won't say too much in between the poems, but I'll preface them with what I've been saying at the readings, and that is I wrote poems in this book that about a period in my life where I investigated a lot of mystical things, esoteric things, and I hadn't really written that much about that period before, so some of these poems will come out of that. The first one is called Self-Portrait as a Doorknob. The doorknob gives back a Flemish painter's version of ourselves, poised in the threshold between worlds. We are only a few brushstrokes of atoms, even less than that, sketched in. But as long as we stand here, posed, composed, we are complete. The hand which turns the knob cannot turn us. This poem takes its title from a line by Charles Wright. The subject of all poems is the clock. Yes, tick, 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 tick. The sky chant each night, the thrumming in my eardrums. No, it's not cricket swell, not tonight. But the voices rise, star chain, ether chorus, the dark around me sonorously aflame with it. In the old days, I played Ouija board, unpredictable instrument. I played seance and past life regression. I strummed aura tunes. Once I felt myself step out of my body and saw a numinous, anonymous double of yellow light. Those were also the days of automatic writing, of glossolalia with the charismatics, our gibberish rising in a faux Sistine. Now I know it's the dead I hear, crowded together in their new harmonic. The moon is their organist, but who is their choir master? Downwind. Midsummer afternoon in the web of hours, a spider's crochet in the camellia, smoke scent from wildfires 50 miles away. Gold fields, coyote brush, mule fat, telegraph weed. Too early for so many corpses of leaves. The river is lined with bad news. Father spider, brother crow, tsunamis in the heart. New moon tonight, streetlights out, copper thieves, burned out lives. Soon cricket music, midnight's castanets. Your face, bezel of green glow minutes, shining in the dark. Night shift. Something woke the hills and the lupins, the poppies and the cliffs, the egrets and the drowsing rice fields roused. Three crows woke, dipping their beaks into moonlit air, bobbing silently on a sycamore's limb. The mildew on the windowsills woke, the molds puffed out their powdered chests, and in the garden the mignonette's white racemes let go their fragrance. The strings on my neighbor's guitar woke. The songs inside began writing themselves on her heart in indelible ink. The down and outs, the drunks passed out, snoring in the reeds beside the river woke. Their empty vodka bottles stood at attention. Even the voiceless bones in the cemetery woke, and each silent grave began singing its own hoarse hymn to La Noche. After the seance, he offered to drive me home. His name was Ellis. He was like an island. He rode me away in his 62 Ford pickup. The night grew dark as deep water around us. Reincarnation was the current on his 70-year-old tongue. We had been lovers in a past life, or, I can't remember clearly now, I had been his wife. He wanted me back, told me I'd have to change my name. I was his now, he said. In those days, I lived on I Street, but he turned down X, then Broadway, and headed west. Even the moon looked worried, and the river felt more like Arctic Sea when he crossed a bridge and parked beside it. SOS. Morning frost on the Honda's windshield, sycamore leaves spread out like tarot cards on my neighbor's lawn. News of the cold front telegraphing. The yet-to-be wearing its goodwill parkas, crossing the mountains in snowshoes. Now the bulldozers have arrived outside. The jackhammers have revved up. Road closed. Detour ahead. The poem is a cipher, a cryptogram. Magician, hanged man, hermit, fool. What's the Morse for that? I'm here with my books, nowhere else to go, while the Iceman cometh. While the iciers gather round. In the 70s, I studied, actually took a couple of classes with Patricia Garfield, creative dreaming, lucid dreaming, where you wake inside the dream and you take action. And so this poem comes out of that. Spider dreams. They mean mother, the lucid dream guru advised. It was the 70s. They carried knives sometimes. They offered aspirins and advice. They shot me in the heart. They fed me pie and ice cream. They cut off my feet and hands. They wrapped me in their sack. They fired machine guns at me. Then one night I woke inside a spider attack. I dressed as ammo and fired back. I was in San Francisco when just this poem came out of the 2008 when they had just reopened the New De Young. So it's called City of My Birth, San Francisco, 2008. Today the air is brisk and cool. The sun hangs like a Rothko in the New De Young. Once departure floated like tea leaves in a fortune teller's foggy cup. I filed some papers in a vanished drawer. I rode a streetcar to the ocean and heard the lions at the edge of the continent roar. Then I jumped through a wedding ring of fire and left. It's easy to remember my 20-year skin, hiking the sidewalk up Stanyan, district of my soon-to-be disappearing. But that first winter, a new baby's cry, a light in a window on Taylor Street. This next poem, I have a note at the back of the book. It refers to the beheading of a scholar in Palmyra. And the poem we'll talk about that, and also about watching The Merchant of Venice on the live from the Royal Shakespeare Company on the big screen in Sacramento. And it's called First Light. I'm reading the morning news. Heartbeats, brainwaves rise and fall. Another beheading in Syria. An old man this time, a scholar. His body hung in the city square with the sign apostate. Ongoing, incoming, outgoing tide. Flute notes, Miyagi, rise and fall in my neighbor's backyard. They mingle and twine the thoughts inside. The thoughts inside want only to ululate. Finches are razoring in and out of the dogwood's drought-stressed branches. Last night, live theater here, Merchant of Venice on the big screen, a Palestinian actor playing Shylock. Hope breeds. Dust motes in my heart's eye, oxalis self-sown beside the fence outside. Tiny yellow flags, stubborn little beauties along the edges of things. Dry run. One more morning in the amaze. One more hosanna to the Nickelodeon sky, where the sun has a cameo appearance today and the clouds move like chorus lines of fine-grained agate. 10:01 a.m., one more click of the minute hand down. The terrier across the street yaps his fevered aria. Pick of the litter in the shade of an olive tree, though his cousin the scrub jay is the life of the party, squawking from the willow thatch above the bird bath, hallelujah. Meanwhile, I'm taking my death thoughts on another dry run. The for sale sign is up in my heart. the garage sale is gathering on some future driveway. Question. To what bedroom does the soul go when the body carries us across sleep's private waters? Is there a vase of flowers there? Tulips, flaming boats? I'm rowing to a place where my thoughts can clear. My head is giving off a mist. Is it cozy there, like 100 hand-stitched quilts? Or is it built of cold catastrophe, of war that divides a husband and wife? An eyelid flickers, a trap door snaps open, and the clear pink skeleton of the dreaming soul flies out. I'll read one that I haven't read yet from this book. Think of the highways. The long-distance conversations between old friends, the tight chests speeding to ER, the remissions, the reprieves. Think of the gleaming limos with the doomed wedding couples, the skeleton inside the ones who will stand alone at the graveside some day hence. Think of the measureless weight of fog, beams of headlights, screech of brakes, the pavement buckling in so many places, knuckling under tons of timber, tomatoes, oil. There have been holy men who said, "Believe and the roads will end in joy." Sometimes at night I swear I hear the soft shoulders weeping, the deathless potholes crying out. Ruby Crown Kinglet. The male has a red patch on his head, which is visible when he gets excited. His fuzzy crest is a funny fright wig, a punker's dyed red spikes, a bottle brush blossom seen up close through a bee's eye. All day he flits madly outside my window, inflamed by a silk amaryllis on the sill. His beak is a graphite stylus, tapping some frantic code for desire into the pane. As I say when I read this poem, I wrote this a long time ago before we knew about the plight of the bees. And it's three parts. It's called Interrogative. One, from what catalog did we order the housefly's designer clothes? What if at the end of the butterfly's wing there is an anti-butterfly? Who developed the grief chemical that poisoned our ozone? If there is a god, does it wear perfume? Two. When will the skulls in their bone uniforms hand us our walking papers? How many bandages will it take before the bleeding stops? Is it true what they say, that there is only one bandage? Three. What if the rose is the temple and the bee is the prophet? Again, another short one. Why I have trouble falling asleep this time of year. The night speaks in tongues. The dogwood is a charismatic. The myrtle prophecies in pink glossolalia and the flowering cherry translates. The moths settle like Chinese calligraphy on the willow my mother planted near the porch lamp. Light from its bulb will recite their antennae to any passer-by. And that loudspeaker, the moon, will begin its hybrid dialogue with a Joseph's coat rose. Years ago, I was the program director for the Sacramento Poetry Center, and we brought a lot of poets from out of town. And several times we had a gathering in our backyard, and this poem comes out of that, refers to that. It's called Roots. I'm entangled here with my inner chatter, my haiku ghosts, my cold weather blather, under the blue skies and storm clouds of memory. Conjuring the loquat tree in our once backyard, the splayed leaves, sweet swell of downy ovate fruits, fragrances of damp branches and the molecules of skin our hands rubbed in when we laid the brick patio underneath. Reconstructing the laughter of poets gathered in its shade, many who are shades now themselves. The warmth of fellowship one summer afternoon, all the ripening words inside them, how one by one I open their books, pluck poems from a page. Heartweed grows rampant at the loquat's roots, in all those invisible countries of bark and syllables and bone that we call home. Haiku ghosts, five hearts, seven truths, and five lost selves in the shadow tree. Don't forget. The moon snail on the beach, its shining hut, its ice-white igloo. The way the grasses on the hills rising from the sea are dried back to brown sticks and the fields have grown an old man's stubble that will green again, that will come back as silks, tender and supple. Don't forget. The young man nearby who practices Tai Chi, his body a lariat, a slow rippling whip, near the surf's lip, the way he bows to the sea at the end as we lift the moon snail onto an invisible plate of late sunlight as we pluck it from its place in the amoral and fractured and timeless universe as we dislodge it. Don't forget. One more from the book and one more from another manuscript and I'll be done. And this is a true story, what I'm about to read. Rio Vista, Sacramento River Delta. Once when we were newly married, your skull dislodged from your body and drifted above me like a death mask bobbing on midnight's string. I was neither asleep nor awake, but suspended somewhere between, wearing the fright wig of the widow in a kabuki-like drama by the river among reeds and vapors. 3 weeks later, your heart tried to quit. Today, we stand at the river's edges in dusk of dawn. Flocks of swallows burst from the rushes over what seems like the first world. Crickets. They kick up a fuss in our hearts, these hot Delta nights. These Delta nights as the starlight pours down in rivulets, in currents, in staggering streams, a silent, salient chorus of dying light. These hot Delta nights. The crickets belt out their sex song, their hope song, the four wings of love. Now that's a concrete thought. These Delta nights, these hot Delta nights. The life wish written in concrete. The life wish signed, dated, sealed, and delivered.
91.1 FM. Many of you in Sonoma County are familiar with the work of the late poet Francisco X. Alarcón. He was also a Sacramento area poet, and he came to read at the Word Temple Poetry Series here on a number of occasions, as well as our old Sonoma County Book Festival. He was the author of about a dozen collections of poetry, and not just poetry for adults, but he wrote some beautiful poems for children as well, including a book called Poems to Dream Together. Some of his other works include From the Other Side of Night, Del Otro Lado de la Noche, Sonnets to Madness and Other Misfortunes, and Of Dark Love. He's worth checking out if you don't have him on your bookshelf. Unfortunately, Francisco died in January of 2016. I'm going to play now at least part of an interview I conducted with him in 2011. Here is the wonderful Francisco X. Alarcón. Welcome, Francisco. I've been to a number of your readings over the years, and you begin them with an invocation to the four directions. Would you tell us why you do that? And then go ahead and lead us in an invocation, and listeners, get ready to stand up.
For me, poetry is magical, and it's a way of going back to the Mesoamerican times. And so I learned calling the four directions from my own grandmother. And so this is a memory that brings back basically the past. And so for me, poetry is a way of traveling through time and space and memories. So I'm going to call the four directions. That is the north first. The north represents the spirits. And so I call Dawi. And then I call the direction of the east that represents fire. Dawi. And then I call the south that represents water. Dawi. And then I call the west that represents the wind. Dawi. And then I ask everybody to basically face each other. That is the center. Because in Mayan, it's called In La Kesh. Tú eres mi otro yo, you are me, and I'm you. And so the old traditions can come together. And so we say to each other, and to you now, Catherine here, Dawi.
Thank you so much. Well, we only have time to look into two of your many, many books today, and I really encouraged people to just get them all. The children's books are beautifully too, beautiful with the illustrations. But I'd like to start with Say Uno One, which came out in 2010. And you have a poem called This Poem. But first, you've been very active in regards to SB 1070. And I wonder if you would just take a minute to update our listeners about what that bill is and what's happening with it. And then read this poem from Say Uno One.
For me, Say Uno One. And this poem really is a response to SB 1070. This is a law that was passed in Arizona in April of last year. And I think it's very important for us to take courage and to oppose this law, because this law is xenophobic and means that anybody can come to me if I walk on the streets on Phoenix and they can demand my papers. San Francisco, your papers. If I was born in Los Angeles, but I was raised in Mexico. And so I'd be taken to jail because I don't have my passport with me. And so this is just totally un-American. And so that's why we were opposed to that. I think I founded a Facebook page called Poets Responding to SB 1070. And now we have about 600,000 people that had visited that site. And we also have altogether about 1,500 poems published, posted. And we're doing an anthology that's going to be published by the University of Arizona Press. So this is the idea that poets responding to something that is very political, but also I think it really refers to the human rights and to civil rights, because we have the civil rights. You know, we are, I'm an American citizen, and so I should not be with fear of walking the streets of Phoenix because I don't have my passport with me. And the poem that I'm going to read is called This Poem, and is dedicated to all the poets who had sent poems to our page on Facebook that is called Poets Responding to SB 1070. This poem is nameless, unlisted, already up before the sun comes out, waiting for the next bus, pickup truck. This poem is speechless, but warm flesh. Wrinkles on skin mark his poetic lines. Night kisses, morning kisses, his bed's rhymes. This poem has the cadence of embraces. loving breasts, arm fights for sleepless nights. This poem is as quiet as a desert night. His sky stars are the punctuation marks of his verses. Three branches recite this poem by heart. This poem has the same dreams as you, the same nightmares, goals, and fears, trembling before the news of his own demise. This poem is everything but faceless. It's a bright teenager, trapped in the dark, soulless, dreamless, no man's land that a dream at could just vanish. This poem cries from the back of the bus. Children's tears wipe out the lines of this poem. This poem is a mother, a father, a neighbor, a human being, bone and flesh, walking around, buying groceries, disposable diapers. This poem is beyond any poetry anthology. We have a heart, a soul, a familia, just like you. This poem is the unwritten poem of this land.
Thank you so much. The line about the children's tears erasing the lines of the poem, tears come. Thank you so much. Well, I assume that you write all of your poems in Spanish and then they are translated to English. And I notice in your poems that all Spanish words are translated into English except the word California. It's always Califas. Is this because it's the original Spanish name for the state, so therefore it's the real name of this state?
Well, Califas is the name that comes from a medieval manuscript that is Spanish, and that is Califas the Queen. And so California comes from Califas, the Amazon queen of this island that the Spanish dream of before even discovering that this was not an island. It was a peninsula first, and then it was California, Northern California and Baja California. And then in the 1960s, Chicanos, you know, and they're basically in coming back to the roots, we took Califas, the original name of California. And so to celebrate the tradition that goes back to the mythology of the Amazons in this land.
That's fantastic. It's such a beautiful word, Califas, too. Okay, so Francisco Aragon versus Francisco Alarcón has translated a good number of your poems to English. And I wonder why, first of all, you would have someone else translate them rather than doing it yourself. It's a curiosity. And I also wonder if this ever brings a different meaning to your work than you even realized when you first wrote the poems.
Well, I believe poetry is open. I really believe that poem is not in control by the poet that writes the poem. I believe poems are open for the reader and the listener and the translator. And I'm always mesmerized when I read my own work in different languages. I write most of my poems in Spanish, and then I write it also in some of them in English. But Francisco Aragon has translated, I think, one of my best works. He translated Body in Flames, Cuerpo en Llamas. He also translated De Amor Oscuro of Dark Love, a collection of sonnets, and also another collection of sonnets called Sonnets to Madness and other misfortunes, Poemas a la Locura y otras penas. And I really wanted to basically have somebody else do the sonnets, because I think the sonnets come in the Spanish tradition. They're 14 lines, 11 syllables each line. They're not rhyming, but they follow the Pablo Neruda scheme of poetry. And I wanted somebody else to do the English versions of the poems. And so I'm very happy that Francisco Aragon did this. He lived in Spain for many years, 10 years, and he was teaching English there. And people thought that it was they had made up the person, that he was not real. And I said, no, Francisco Aragon exists, and he's coming back. So I'm glad that he came back, and now he is very well known, and he has his own books of poetry published, and he is now the head of Letras Latinas, something that's done by the University of Notre Dame, and he works in Washington, D.C. now.
Well, I know he exists because the two of you read together at the Word Temple Poetry Series many years ago, so I've seen him with my own eyes. Well, you mentioned Of Dark Love, and that's one of the sections in your book, Other Side of Madness, New and Selected Poems. Of Dark Love addresses a hidden love. Why hidden?
Well, you know, this is something that really is part of the book itself. He was doing translations in Spain for a professor, Professor Walsh, Walter Walsh, who did the first collected poems by Garcia Lorca, UC Press. It was a two-volume, and for the first time in history, a collection of poems called De Amor Oscuro came out. I did not know, because the poems were never published. And so I had done books of poems about love, and they're basically homoerotic. And so I told Francisco when I met him in La Boheme in a cafe in San Francisco that I had called my collection Of Dark Love. And he told me Garcia Lorca had done something the same way in 1935. He was killed, you know, that year. And I think the reason why he was killed because he was homosexual. So here I am, a Chicano in the 20th century, dealing with the same themes. And so I thought I was going to change the title of my collection, but then I decided not to, because this is a love. I'm a gay person. I'm in love with my partner. We got married, you know, and so I'm one of 18, you know, 1,000 couples that got married here in the state of California. And we've been together 22 years. So, you know, and so this is what this collection is all about.
That's absolutely beautiful. And I had the sense that Federico Garcia Lorca is a mentor of yours, because I knew that he had written sonnets of hidden love or dark love. And all of this makes just perfect sense. Would you read the fourth sonnet from that collection of dark love?
I will. And this is it's dedicated to the hands. And the fourth sonnet goes, I read first in Spanish. Tus manos son dos martillos que clavan y desclavan alegres la mañana. Tiernos puños desdoblados de tierra. Dulces pencas de plátanos pequeños. Tus manos huelen a las zarzamoras que cosechas en los campos que roban tu sudor a $2 el bote. Son duras, tibias, jóvenes y sabias, asadones que traen pan a las mesas, oscuras piedras que a chocar dan luz, gozo sostén, ancla del mundo entero, yo las venero como relicarios, porque como gaviotas anidadas, me consuelan, me alegran, me defienden. 4. Your hands are two hammers that joyfully nail down and pray up the morning. Tender fists that unfold from earth, sweet bunches of small bananas, your hands smell of the blackberries, you harvest in the fields that still you sweat at $2 a bucket. The hard, warm, young and wise, holes that bring bread to the tables, dark stones that give light when struck, place to support anchor of the universe. I worship them as reliquaries, because like nesting seagulls, they console, the light defend me.
Really beautiful. Thank you so much. So in the section Sonnets to Madness and Other Fortunes, why madness?
Well, I think madness really heals. There is a saying in Spanish that says, la locura cura. And I really believe this. The madness of art, the madness of poetry. In this culture, if you're a poet, you're almost a weirdo. You are, you know, you're basically an outsider of society, because you're a thinker, you're a visionary, you're a shaman almost of words. And so I think, you know, the idea that, yes, we have to accept the madness of poetry, the madness of love, the madness of art, and that's what this collection is all about.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's end with two more sonnets from Sonnets to Madness and Other Misfortunes. The second sonnet and sonnet number 9.
Number 2. I want to embrace you, dear wind. It struck your summer deck and kiss you, small face, till all distances disappear. The hills, vineyards, the sea are borne lightly on your shoulders like dawn's youthful pleasure. You turn night into day. When I aspire you to your freedom, to see mountaintops with your eyes, the blaze that rouses streets and beds. When don't you see my hands? Don't you feel the heat inside me? I too, within my veins, carry fire. And I read a poem that I like to read tonight. And this poem is number 10. Because it's when love talks back. This is when basically, you know, love is a dialogue between the author, the poet, and the beloved. And so this is when love talks back. This is number 10. Francisco. Dos caminos hay en el mundo. El verse un día en un espejo. O el nunca llegar a verse de veras. Verse es vivir, no verse estar muerto. Me aleccionas. Mírame, yo soy más que mi mirada, más que una sonrisa en plena calle, más que todos los horizontes juntos. El que te mira es más que ese que miras. Al verme en ti, descubro lo que soy. Así quiero que tú te veas en mí. Que al mirarme te mires mirándote. Mírame que me estoy mirando en ti. Mírame que tú eres espejo mío. Mírame que yo quiero ser el tuyo. 10. There are two ways in this world. To see yourself one day in a mirror or never see your true self-image. To see yourself is to live. Not seeing yourself is death. You tell me, Francisco, look at me. I am more than my look, more than a passing smile on the street, more than pale horizons. The one who looks at you is more than the one you look at. Seeing myself in you, I discover who I am. I want you to see yourself likewise in me. Looking at me, see yourself looking at you. Look at me, for I see myself in you. Look at me, for you are my mirror. Look at me. I want to be yours. And I like to read the poem from this collection about the poem about sunflower, because this had to do with the idea of the December 21st, you know, and that was an important, you know, important date, because I think sunflower comes from the collection Say. I read it first in Spanish and English. December 21st, 2012. It's not the end of the world. It's another beginning. And I think it's important to know that the Mayans consider this as a new beginning. And the name of the new sun is called flower. The flower, Xochitl in Nahuatl. Xochitl flower. The flower of the sunflower. And I think it's a beautiful concept, because flower represents the best in humanity, represents beauty. And so the poem goes, Sol, flor, sabremos que el nuevo sol ha llegado cuando comience a llover al revés y el mar y el cielo se conviertan en un azul continuo. Sabremos que la nueva era del nuevo sol profetizado por nuestros ancestros ha comenzado cuando la mayor parte del mundo y su preocupación sean el color y el olor de las flores que brotan de la nada donde quiera. Sunflower, we will know the new sun has arrived when it starts raining backwards and the sea and the sky becomes one blue continuum. We will know the era of the new sun prophesied by your ancestors has begun when the world's highest concern becomes the colors and the scents of flowers sprouting from nowhere, everywhere.
Thank you so much for coming, Francisco Alarcón, and I hope you'll let me know when that new anthology comes out.
Yes, I will. I will, you know, and since we started with an Nahuatl invocation, I'd like to finish with an Nahuatl invocation.
Please do.
Because I think, you know, this is the way you do. You open the magic, and then you end with the magic. And so this is, since I collected my corn, you know, I came from Mexico 2 weeks ago, and I planted corn, and now the corn is flowering in my backyard. And so this is for planting corn. The poem goes in Nahuatl. No maca ne huatl, ni tla macasqui, tla chihualuian. No hueletiu tona catzihuatl, tla chihualuian, tla tecutli. And the poem goes on. The whole translation in English goes, for planting corn, I myself, spirit and flesh. Hear me, Tonakatsihuatl, elder sister, lady of our flesh. Hear me, Tlatecutli, Mother Earth. On your open hand, I'm setting down my elder sister, Tonakatsihuatl. Don't shame yourself. Don't grumble. Don't laugh at us. Tomorrow or the day after, I want to see again the face of my elder sister, Tonakatsihuatl. Let her stand on the ground. I shall greet, I shall honor my elder sister, Tonakatsihuatl.
This is Catherine Hastings. You've been listening to the late Francisco X. Alarcón, a poet we lost at much too young of an age. His work is still extremely relevant, obviously, and I encourage you to look him up. If you have any questions about Francisco, please feel free to get in touch with me. We're going to go out with another cut from Herbie Hancock's The Imagine Project, and this is Imagine, written by John Lennon, and it features India Ari and Jeff Beck, among others. I hope you enjoyed tonight's program. If you have any questions or comments, please do get in touch with me at khastings@wordtemple.com. Thanks for listening.
Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger, a brotherhood of men. Imagine all the people sharing all the wealth. You may say, I'm a bengal man.